Hi, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with the Positive Mind, WBAI, 99.5 FM on your dial. Bringing you ideas, concepts, things to think about. You know, and some of the times, there's some basic understandings that I think you could use. You see, with all this study in psychology over so many years, there's stuff that I assume. You know, it's just I know it, so it's kind of second nature to me. But then one of my students brought to my attention that I have not presented this information on air. I've given many lectures on it, but it's not something that I've brought to you, so I want to talk to you about it today. Today I want to talk to you about nervousness. Yep, nervousness, anxiety, excitement, energy, fear, all of those. Just think of the energy of them, right? Anxiety, nervousness, excitement. Can you feel the bubbles inside you? Can you feel that little bubbling kind of feeling? Well, all of those things seem to have something in common. And we want to talk about that so you can understand it today. We're going to talk about it from the point of the magnificent model of the human body, well, actually, most animals, which is this balance that we have in our nervous system. The nervous system, the autonomic nervous system, as it's called, once called that because it was thought to be automatic. The autonomic nervous system is beautifully balanced into two separate parts. One part of the autonomic nervous system is called the parasympathetic nervous system. Parasympathetic, which is the part that is there to help you rest, digest, relax, regenerate. When the parasympathetic nervous system dominates, you're generally calm. The other half of the nervous system is the sympathetic nervous system. The sympathetic nervous system is the one that is used for fight, flight, freeze, you know, when you get scared and you stay in one place. So the one that takes a lot of energy is called the sympathetic nervous system, and the one that you relax to is called the parasympathetic nervous system. Now, these two are in balance. It's not 50-50. It could be 60-40. It could be 70-30. But they are in balance, and they are opposing but complementary. See, they are kind of leaning against each other, but they're complementary. And it's very important to kind of understand both. If you get nervous, if you feel nervous, you are mostly functioning on a sympathetic nervous system. On your sympathetic nervous system, there is a condition where you are firing so many nerves, it's called sympathetic overload. Sympathetic overload is like having a panic attack or when you just feel like you're cracking up from just too much nervousness. Many of you have experienced that. But if you can understand anxiety, if you could understand this energy of the sympathetic nervous system, I think you're going to get a big handle on it. Because to understand it is to look at yourself and say, oh, I understand what's happening. I see what's happening in me. Let's look at some of the physiological, the physical reactions in the sympathetic nervous system firing. Remember now, there are two parts to the autonomic nervous system. Sympathetic nervous system, parasympathetic nervous system. I used to remember how the difference when I was in school because I thought of parasympathetic as parachute. You know, like kind of floating down to earth. Oh, here comes my parasympathetic nervous system. Ooh, coming down easy. Sympathetic nervous system, well, the word sympathetic didn't fit so much because it really has to do a lot with hunting or being afraid or fighting. It's all that anxious stuff that we have to do in life. Now, these mechanisms have been inherited from the reptiles. It's in our reptilian brain. I mean, this very same mechanism. It's very, very old. Originally, in the time of primitive man, these responses had a clear purpose in protecting us from wild animals and other concrete perils. In modern society, we have very few direct threats. Tigers do not jump out from between cars and attack us. Yet we have a mechanism inside us that is something that comes in our genes that says, you know, should a tiger attack you between cars, we're going to give you this mechanism to help you run away real fast, and a number of other things are going to take place. But since there are not such dangers and we still have the mechanism that is the response to this danger, it is very important to understand how primitive we are and our primitive mechanism. So let's talk about what happens inside your body. When you feel, when the energy is upped, when your nervous energy, when your excitement, all the same thing, either you're nervous, excited, anxious, but when you feel this raise in energy, a number of things begin to happen in your body because your body says, oops, we're nervous, there must be a danger. That's what your body says. Your mind could say to your body, there's no danger. But your body's still going to show these reactions. It's still going to have these reactions. And here they come. What are some of the signs of you getting nervous, anxious? Well, one is a heartbeat. Why does your heart beat fast? The heartbeat is accelerated to pump more blood to the muscles that will be needed for the impending struggle that the mind interprets you must be having any minute now because you're nervous. So when you're anxious and when you have a sympathetic reaction, heartbeat fast. Bum, 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 bum. Now, you could be excited about the fact that somebody you just met is coming over to dinner. And they're not going to hurt you. It could be a friend. You know, you met this person at work. You like him a lot. You invite him over. And it's just going to be an okay time. And suddenly you get nervous. Is my house clean? And you start thinking. And then you're starting to move around. And you're trying to get things done. And your heart starts beating fast. Now, what your heart is saying is get ready for fight. Get ready for battle. Okay. The peripheral blood vessels, the ones near the surface of the body, they're contracted, right? The ones around the skin. And the blood pressure thereby is raised to maintain the arterial pressure for the emergency need, you see? So we pull blood away from your extremities. You don't need it there. Pump it up to those smooth muscles. Raise your blood pressure because you need that for battle. There's a thing called, you know, in fact, people who get really anxious, sometimes you see their faces blanch, they turn white. That's called blanching with fear. That's because the peripheral nerve vessels have sent the blood down to where it's more useful. Digestion stops. Because you don't want to be using digestion, your blood for digestion. You don't want to do that. You want to keep everything up for the battle. So here it is, my friends, whether you're excited, whether you're energized, whether you're nervous, it doesn't matter. The body sees the sympathetic nervous system firing and says we must be in danger. Here are some of the other things it does. There's a cold sweat. The cold sweat occurs preparatory to the warm sweat of an actual muscular activity. Your body wants to cool down. There's a tendency to need to go to the bathroom. Have you ever felt that? You know, you're getting a little anxious. Like, let's say you're going to go see some nice show, some nice, pleasant thing. Radio City Music Hall, Christmas time, Nutcracker Suite. How benign can you get? Right? And you're going to go see it, and everything is calm, and you're rushing there with your kids. And suddenly, everybody before the performance has to go to the bathroom. And you'll look at the ladies' room, and they'll be, you know, 50 people lined up outside trying to get in the bathroom right before the show's about to begin. Why? Well, excitement leads you to want to have your body lose its weight so that it could be there for battle. Now, you're going to watch Nutcracker. You're going to be, you know, seeing something. You're going to be sitting down, seeing something pretty or hearing nice music, but your body thinks there's a danger because it's seeing your excitement. Now, this happens whenever you get excited. And it's important to understand because it'll actually save you a lot of trouble. Your breathing gets deeper or more rapid in order to ensure a plentiful supply of oxygen Now, he's always one. The pupils of the eyes dilate. Do you know that? Because you want to be able to see better. You get a better view of your peripheral vision when your pupils dilate. And that's the expression, you hear the expression, people who have eyes wide with fear? You know, you look at somebody, they look like they're on drugs. The eyes just get real wide because this is a good purpose. You want to be able to spot the enemy. The liver releases sugar to provide energy for the struggle. And then there's this blood clotting mechanism. You know, you've all heard about people who have had clots and they have to take Coumadin or something else like that or aspirin to thin their blood so they don't get blood clots. Well, there's a blood clotting mechanism that we all secrete naturally. But as soon as you get excited, as soon as you get nervous, there is a surge of this blood clotting mechanism in your body. Now, here's what it's saying. Why would you be secreting a blood clotting mechanism when you're about to go on a first date? Right? Person certainly, or you, let's say you're inviting your mother over for dinner. Mom's coming over for dinner. You're nervous because your house is a little dirty. Afraid she's going to criticize you, but you're also anxious and you're looking forward to seeing a blood clotting mechanism as if mom is coming over with a butcher knife and she's going to stab you. And your body says, we better be able to clot this blood in case she tears off our arm or something or bites off our ears. You know, so that's what your body's doing when you're excited. The entire placing the organism on this emergency footing includes what I said about digestive activity suspended. The mouth feels dry because of a decreasing of the flow of saliva, corresponding to the suspending of the flow of gastric juices in the stomach. You don't need gastric juices. Your mouth gets dry because you don't need that for the saliva. You get dry mouth when you're nervous. Face blanches, dry mouth. Blood clotting mechanism. No wonder when your mother walks in the door, she says, what's the matter? You know, nothing, Mom. I'm just excited about your coming here. But I got to go to the bathroom. All right. Smooth muscles of, there's a tendency towards having to rush and get yourself as clear as possible. All of this is going on, my friends, when you feel nervous, anxious, or excited, and this is the difference now, including fear. What happens when your body feels all of this stuff going on? What happens? It says, oh my God, there must be a danger, there must be a danger. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind, trying to explain anxiety to you, in a way, and I want you to understand all of the nervous system, including the parasympathetic and the sympathetic nervous system. We're talking about the two divisions of the, autonomic nervous system called the parasympathetic and the sympathetic nervous system. We're now talking about the sympathetic nervous system and the way it reacts to perceived threat. So here we are now. Now you have this sympathetic thing going on. And this is a funny thing about humans. Humans have a very funny thing to do with eating. Some people cannot digest. Digestion is stopped the minute they feel anxious. Other people will eat tremendously, a tremendous amount of food. Some people can't eat, other people eat a lot. Here's the idea. Only humans do this because other animals don't do it. If you eat a lot of food, you force digestion. If you force digestion, what are you forcing? Because remember, I said digestion is part of the parasympathetic nervous system. So here's what happens. If you're somebody who tends to eat a lot, you will remember that there is a moment you're nervous and you're eating, let's say you get a box of Entenmann donuts. Remember Entenmann donuts? Pre-Krispy Kremes? Entenmann donuts or something like that. You get a box of something you shouldn't have in your house in the first place and you have a whole box of them and you're one of these people who are just going to keep eating and eating and eating till you go past the sate point, the point at which you're satiated. But the idea here is that you are nervous and you're eating out of nervousness, and you don't know why. And then all of a sudden, you get this feeling. Now, when I say this feeling, there is a moment of eating when you're this type of person who eats out of fear or anxiety where you suddenly feel like you've had enough. You could be, you know, it could be 10 donuts. Could be 3/4 of a quart of ice cream. you know, instead of the whole quart, this thing kicks in and you get this feeling. And now we go back to the parasympathetic nervous system. You feel like you're in a parachute. You relax for a moment. You just suddenly, you've been nervous, and then suddenly you go, and there you are with just two donuts left, you know, and half a glass of milk, and you eat it anyway. But there is the point where you felt this thing kick in, because one of the things that happen when you digest like this is very often you'll go to sleep. So you'll find a release away from all of this anxiety. Armand DeMille with you at the Positive Mind. We're going to be taking your calls about this today because I want you to understand as best you can this kind of balance in the nervous system, anxiety, energy. If you didn't hear the beginning of the program and you're interested in this, you can get a copy by calling my office. Now, what happens when you feel all this nervousness taking place inside your body is you try to look what's the natural thing for an animal to do. If an animal gets nervous, it says, where's the danger? So you as a human suddenly get anxious for no reason that you understand. And suddenly, and it could be you just drank a cup of coffee, you know what I mean? You just felt a little nervousness and now you're nervous. And the first thought you have is, where's the danger? Now, this is a very interesting question that we ask ourselves, where is the danger? Because it's at the basis of a lot of psychological stuff. You know, where's the danger is quite an important question that humans ask themselves. If you ask yourself, where's the danger, you're going to be looking all around you for what's making me feel nervous. Then you're going to pick something and say, ah, it's that's making me feel nervous. It's that I'm waiting for a phone call from my boyfriend is making me nervous. It's that it's my mother's birthday that's making me nervous. You fetch. Your mind actually fetches to find the cause of your anxiety or excitement. And it'll pick something. And it picks it whatever it could attach to. I knew a lady who had phobias. She was a patient. She had phobias. She had this one phobia about, I think I said this, about the Andrea Doria coming out of a shower cap. She would get nervous, and then she would always kind of attribute it to the fact that there was going to be some kind of a major thing happening with her shower head. Those are phobias. Those get really, really bent out of shape. But other people will pick on just about anything. It's the neighbor downstairs. It's the noise. It's the dog. It's the fleas in the house. It's the noise in the city. It's those pesky people in Central Park. You know, you could pick on just about anything to account for your nervousness, because when your mind latches on, when it says, ah, that must be it, then that thought becomes very important. Because, you know, if you feel like you're under attack, you want to know your enemy. And once you identify an enemy, you focus on it. You say, okay, now that's it. It's the guy downstairs making all that noise. Why doesn't he get a new carpet? Or the guy upstairs. Why doesn't he get a new carpet? I'm going to write to him. I'm going to write to my landlord. I'm going to, and you just focus on that and focus on that and focus on that until you burn up enough energy that you could finally relax. But that's what happens to the mind. Now, what's very important about this, humans worry. They start with vigilance. All animals start off with a little natural vigilance. I'm a little concerned. Vigilance becomes concern. Concern can turn into worry. You know the big difference? Hey, you know, how do you feel about the next attack coming from some terrorists? You know, I'm concerned. That's one person. The other person is, I'm worried. Now, which one do you think is suffering more? Well, the one who's worried has taken this into a higher state of excitement. Now you go a step further. You go from vigilance to concern to worry, and the next step is paranoia. I don't know where the enemy is because I can't spot it. So the enemy's somewhere and they're going to come and try to get me because you can't spot it. And you could actually get bent very far out of shape. And the basis of all paranoia, my friends, is hyperexcitement. It's a raised level of anxiety. It's hypersympathetic nervous system or sympathetic nervous system overload. Am I saying too much? Last time I delivered this was 1986. It was a classroom. I remember giving this as a classroom once. It was great. So one of the things you want to do is recognize how to spot the nervousness building in your body before it accumulates. Because here's what happens to nervousness. If you get very nervous, you send your mind out to fetch. Go find something to worry about. Calm people don't worry as much. Right? So if you get nervous, you send your mind out and you say, where's the enemy? Where's the enemy? And you got to find that. That's one thing you do. The other thing you do to protect yourself against anxiety is you tense your body. Yes, tension is always a sign of hyperexcitement. Tension, a person, what are they tensing? They're holding back. They're holding back the energy. Because the energy makes you feel crazy. You get nervous. You feel like you're going to lose your mind. So you tense your body. Stress, therefore, which is holding the tension for a long period of time, stress is always a reaction to nervousness. And then strain, which is the breaking down of the muscles as a result of holding them tight too long, therefore is also. So wouldn't it be great if we could just get a tackle on nervousness and just get an idea of what it is when it's happening inside our body? Well, in order to do that, we have to get away from our thoughts. Because our thinking is what drives us crazy. The first thing we got to do is figure out, I'm nervous. I think I better look to see where I feel this in my body. And there is a way of becoming aware of your body and letting yourself release this energy by paying attention to it, locating it, and letting yourself feel it as opposed to denying it. That's a little more difficult. I'm going to try to get into that a little later. Recognition is very important. Recognition because you want to spot the anxiety before it accumulates. And you could use your musculature as a kind of feedback system. Where are you nervous? Where are you nervous? You know, if you feel your tension in your own body right now, where do you have it? It was an interesting thing Peter Hogan once taught. He was a Reichian psychotherapist who kind of studied the muscle armor of the body. And one of the things Peter used to say is wherever a person feels their tension the most will reflect where in their earlier lives they had the most psychological damage. And here's what he used to say. It was really fascinating. He said if a person has digestive problems, that's usually the very beginning. He said that's usually the infant trying to digest and being unable to digest because of tensions in the family. Another one he used to point to was tension around the upper neck. People who feel tension around the upper neck, he used to say, that's people who are always trying to hold their heads up. He said these are people who need to relax, but they're always keeping their head up, always keeping it up. Sometimes you got to let your head fall. Same with the back. He used to say they're carrying a burden on their back. You could really see it in their musculature. So the body kind of tells you a great deal. Armand DeMille here. So we're talking about the sympathetic nervous system and how the sympathetic nervous system will give us a reaction, and then it's what we do with our mind that makes it good or bad. So here it is. If let's say you drink a cup of coffee, or you have a cola, or something stimulates you, and now you're stimulated, it is what you do with your mind that will turn this into a good thing or a bad thing. It's going to turn it into a good feeling or a bad feeling. So let's say you suddenly had something, or you drank something, or you had some ginseng or something, and something made you feel more alive, more vibrant. and you happen to be joining the thousands of people on Monday who are going to take the walk through the gates at Central Park on 72nd Street and 5th Avenue at 2 o'clock, and you happen to be there and you have this feeling inside your body, and now you're excited, but you're with a group of people who are also excited and everybody's smiling. What do you think happens to you? Well, the very same nervousness turns into a smile. It turns into excitement. The negativity leaves. If you're around a group of happy people and you feel a little nervous, you tend to get happy. You see? If you're around a group of worrisome people, concerned people, negative people, and you feel the very same anxiety from eating ginseng, for example, or anything else that you might have taken in, you can easily join them in their field of negativity. The mind is very flexible. It will choose a direction to go. It will say, where is the enemy, or what is it we're supposed to be excited about? Because remember, there are two things that the sympathetic nervous system monitors. Number one, it's fight or flight when it's in danger. But the other is hunt. Hunt is excitement. Now, I'm not just saying hunt for food. Hunt for your lover. Hunt for your mate. You know, hunt. Go out there. It's an excitement in going on the hunt as well. So our excitement will bring us to a feeling, will bring us to a feeling that we're on a kind of a hunt. You know? Hey, this is Armand DeMille with you. So it is difficult for us to be able to identify it, and I'm not saying that people don't get anxious, don't get nervous, but if you constantly find a way of not being nervous is biting your nails, for example, well, that's it. You're gonna be, you know, you gotta guarantee yourself a little pain every time you get nervous. If you feel yourself nervous, open yourself up. See what it's like to just feel it. Relax your body. Let it rush through you. Watch what happens. Well, believe it or not, Gestalt therapists kind of learned a long time ago that this is one of the ways of treating it. And believe it or not, it's very easy. Of course, we had psychiatry around who was giving out medicine. You know, they're giving out Valium and they were giving out Xanax. And they said, oh, you're nervous here. Take a pill. And this will relax you. Nobody ever teaches you how to let yourself feel anxious or excited and just to let it go through and become part of your body. But that's part of the cure. That's part of the way you deal with it. This is Armand DeMille. We're going to be, when we get back from our break today, I'm going to be taking your calls about this because I want to talk about this. I also want to talk about panic attacks and what panic attacks are like. But just to keep you in mind, that we have this physiological factor, this thing we go through physiologically, and we can beat it by using our minds. Sometimes you need to have a therapist around who helps you identify your body and help you identify the feelings inside your body and identify the feelings in your body and learn how to sit through them, and that's kind of the way you get through this. We're going to be back with you in just a little bit. Michael, and I will be, and then we'll take your calls. Yeah.
Got a black magic woman. Got a black magic woman. I got a black magic woman. She's got me so blind I can see. That she's a black magic woman and she's trying to make a devil out of me. Don't turn your back on me, baby. Don't turn your back on me, baby. Don't turn your back on me, baby. Stop messing around with your tricks. You just might pick up my magic sticks. Thank you. got your spell on me, baby. You got your spell on me, baby. You got your spell on me, baby. You're turning my heart into stone. I need you so badly, magic woman. I just can't leave you alone.
Patricia Barber, B-A-R-B-E-R, Black Magic Woman. Very interesting. I thought you'd find that interesting as well, my friends. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. If you missed the first half of our program, you could get a copy of it by calling my office, 212-757-4488. I want to talk about panic attacks, and then we're going to be taking your calls. Let's talk about panic attacks. Unlike a phobia, which is usually triggered by a specific situation, a panic attack occurs unpredictably. Now, usually victims experience intense fear and may believe they are dying, going crazy, or losing physical control. Now, this is this kind of a sense of dread. That's what it feels like. I mean, a panic attack, when a person's in the middle of a panic attack, they are sure, they're acting as if they're about to die. I've seen a couple of people in hospitals who are dying. The look on their face when they recognize that they are dying is similar to the look on somebody's face when they're having a panic attack, because that's how the person feels. So how you treat it is very important. Some of the signs of it are a shortness of breath or the feeling of smothering. They can't catch their breath. Dizziness, unsteadiness, or fainting. Heart palpitations, or the racing heart rate that goes to such a point you could practically hear the person's heartbeat. Trembling, shaking, sweating, choking, nausea, or stomach pain. So what you see is an exaggeration of all the things that I told you happen with the sympathetic nervous system. You know, instead of suspending the digestion, you now have nausea. You have stomach pain. Instead of just, you know, the peripheral nerve vessels dilate and therefore constrict, and therefore you don't have blood at these, you can get a numbing or a tingling, flushing or chills. You can actually feel this blood rushing away from all these parts of your body, and you can start getting really nervous, flushing, chills. You get a chest pain or a discomfort in your chest and a sense of strangeness of being detached from yourself and your surroundings. So there you are. When you're having a panic attack, it's like you're this lost being who doesn't feel connected to the world anywhere. There's nobody to really trust. You look in stark terror at everybody around you. And you don't know what to do, and you can't trust anybody, and you feel like you're dying. It's a terrible feeling. One thing that's important to understand about panic attacks, they last only 20 minutes. Now, this is very important, because if you know somebody who's having a panic attack, you've got to get them through the next 20 minutes. A lot of people having panic attacks wind up in hospitals. You know, they go rushing to the hospital emergency ward. By the time they get to the emergency ward, and by the time they get taken in, the panic attack has passed. And one of the things they know at the front desk at triage is that if a person is having a panic attack, they may as well just sit in the waiting room. Because they're going to know they're in a safe place like the hospital. So if they really died, somebody could come out and take care of them. And in that time, this thing will pass. So by the time they are seen, they give them a mild kind of sedative or something to relax, very, very mild, and then they let you out. 20 minutes, 22 minutes. How do you deal with somebody who is very nervous? And this is what I want to teach you. I want to teach you not only as a therapist, which I am, I want to teach you one of the things you could do. First of all, when somebody is excited, and when they're speeding, and when you could see them like even having a manic moment. You know, when people are manic, that's a form of excitement. or when people are just hyper excited, or when your child is excited. And they come running to you, and they say to you, and they come to you in this very excited or scared way, what do you do? Well, one of the things that a lot of people try to do is they try to calm people down, and they say, calm down. They tell a person, calm down, and you have to calm down. Now, that may work in some cases, because sometimes the shock of having somebody yell at you actually will calm you down. It's like a slap in the face. May actually, you know, I'm not saying anybody should do it, but it works for different reasons. It drops the metabolism of the body. So, but these are not ways that I think we should employ or use. If a person is feeling very, very nervous and they come to you and they're speaking very fast, which they usually are, the first thing you do is join them. Join them at their level of anxiety. Come up to them if they say to you, look, I gotta get going. I don't know what's the matter with me. There's something really going on. He's very, very scared. And the first thing you could do, my friends, is say to them, oh, I see you're really scared. I see, I understand you're really in trouble. Join them at their level. Go up with them. Instead of trying to take away their stuff, go up with them and get up there with them and then slowly start reducing the speed at which you're speaking and moving. So, for example, I would be saying to you, you know, I'm really nervous. I don't know what to do. Oh, I see you're really nervous. I see you're really scared. I see you came in here with your family. Listen now, you could be here probably within 20 minutes or within a half hour. I'm going to be able to really pay attention to you. But right now I see that, you know, if you could just sit here and be with me for a couple of minutes and I'm sure somewhere you're going to feel better. See, now I just did it. I went from speaking very fast to speaking very slowly, but I slowly brought my voice down so that I'm actually showing you that you could virtually do the same thing. And it works, my friends. It works really well. That's helping people deal with both panic attacks and in dealing with anxiety. Now, one of the things that a lot of people think is that if a person is feeling anxious, they need contact. It kind of is true they need contact, but the kind of contact is very important. The biggest mistake people do is they rub your back. When you are overstimulated, the thing you don't want is stimulation. You don't want anybody to be rubbing you in any kind of way. What you want is a solid hand. If you know of somebody with a beautiful hand, you take that hand's going to be the most welcome thing in the world. So what you do is a solid hand. You put your hand solidly on somebody's shoulder. You leave it there on their forearm. You leave it there. You just let them know. You don't hold tight. Don't cage them. Just put your arm there. Put your hand there and let them feel the contact of your skin with theirs. That's the biggest help you could be to people. So as well as talking to them and knowing that you're concerned and looking at them and taking them seriously, there's a form of touch which helps people. But some people, when they get paranoid, they want to avoid any touch. They don't want to be touched. They're so stimulated they can't take any touch. So you take your clues from them. If they don't want any touch at all, just remove your hands. Just say, I'm going to sit back. This is Armand DeMille. Telephone number here is 212-209-2900. I'm bringing you this information on anxiety. I'm willing to talk to you about it. 212-209-2900. We're with you today. And now I just heard that we may not be off all next week, but just Tuesday and Wednesday. And we will probably be back with you on Thursday next week, which, you know. And that we may not. No, we'll either be with you Thursday or we won't be with you Thursday, but we will definitely be back with you the following Tuesday. I know it's confusing. I'm trying to inform all of you through my newsletter now, which I've activated. We've got about 3,500 people strong who are now getting announcements from me weekly. And to get to that, you go to thepositivemind.com, my website, and sign up for the newsletter, and I'll send you information. My announcement about Monday, just to let you know, because I think it's going to be an interesting event, at the gates in Central Park, 72nd Street and 5th Avenue, at 2 p.m., there's going to be a gathering of religious leaders who are going to walk the gates in silence, from what I understand. And it should be a really interesting event if you can make yourself free at 2 o'clock on Monday. 212-209-2900. We're going to take one of your calls right now. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Oh, hi, Armand.
Hi there.
My name is Paul. I'm in Manhattan.
Hello, Paul.
I had an experience about 30 years ago which caused me to go through a lot of panic attacks, and eventually I developed agoraphobia. And I just wondered...
Let's tell people what agoraphobia is. Can you turn down your phone?
Oh, yes.
Your radio.
Can you hold on, please?
Sure.
Thank you.
Well, I'll hold on for quite a while. He's coming back, I promise.
Hello?
Hi there.
Yes, I'm sorry. Okay, agoraphobia, actually. It's a Greek word, I guess. It comes from a Greek word meaning agora, outdoor, or market. And the fear of the outdoors, the fear of the market, open places.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what it is?
Yes, that's what it is.
Yeah. So anyhow, I had a bad dream, and I couldn't breathe in the dream. I couldn't wake up, and I thought I was going to die. And that was the last thought I had before I finally woke up. But by the time I woke up, I'd become a totally different person.
Wow.
Life to me meant everything negative. And I've been going through this for about 30 years.
So when did this happen? You said 30 years ago?
Yeah, back in the 1970s.
Okay, in the 1970s you had this dream. Do you remember anything that surrounded this dream or anything about the dream?
Well, I worked with Citibank. I was a salesman. And I had just come back from Florida. We had a meeting down there in Fort Lauderdale. But I had a couple of bad experiences down there, and I came back early. And that night when I went to bed, when I woke up out of my bad dream, I thought I was still in Florida. And I was looking for some of my coworkers, some of the sales reps, and I realized I was home. And I was so stunned and shocked. I didn't know what to do. I was so nervous, like you were saying. I was shaking like a leaf and couldn't catch my breath and didn't know what happened to me. And from that time on, I mean, my whole life.
What kind of bad experiences did you have in Florida?
Well, I'm African American, and I was the only black salesman on the force, Citibank Travelers Checks sales rep. And I went down for about 4 or 5 years in a row, and every year I had some pretty bad experiences with a lot of the guys. We sponsored the races down there, the Daytona 500, uh-huh, and those type races. And at the pit stop, I would run into some, Ku Klux Klan members. I guess they were, you know. Have all kinds of things said to me, and I just got tired of it. And so I told my boss, and finally I just left. And when I came back, that's when I had the dream.
So you finally separated yourself from this by saying, I can't take it anymore.
Yeah.
And you came back, so something inside of you was cracking, and then you had this dream,
right,
the result of which was agoraphobia, which means you could no longer go out.
Yeah, this was for many, many years. It's only within the past maybe 9, 10 years that I started traveling and whatnot.
Mm.
Prior to that, I couldn't even think about getting on a train or even going in the subway, for that matter.
So something inside of you, some part of you, that's been scared your whole life. Now, I'm going to go to the Ku Klux Klan for a minute and ask you about references to the KKK in your own mind.
Sure.
What did you think of them? What did you know of them? What did you hear about them when you were a kid?
Oh, I knew quite a bit about them. But you know, it wasn't their presence that scared me. I wasn't afraid of them. I just didn't like, I didn't like the words that were being said amongst all of my other white coworkers.
Mm-hmm.
And although they said, hey, man, don't worry about it. If anything happens, we got your back. But that wasn't the point. I mean, I just didn't want to be in their presence.
So it sounds to me that you got angry.
I got pretty angry, yeah.
But you didn't show the anger, right?
Well, one night I did. As a matter of fact, the night that I fled, I fled Florida, a buddy and I were hanging out, a co-worker of mine and I, we were hanging out, and we were on the strip of A1A in Fort Lauderdale,
mm-hmm,
and we were going to different clubs, and I had parked the car, and he was kind of tipsy, so a big Polish guy, and I put his arm around my shoulder, and I said, listen, man, let's go back to the car and go back to the car. No, we want to hang out. So anyhow, a car was pulling into the parking lot, and there were two white men. Make a long story short, one of them jumped out. They asked me to move, and I said, listen, my friend is sick. And the guy cursed at me and called me, you know, the N-word from the North. You know, I think I'm smart. I think, mm-hmm, I'm a wise guy. So I had to pretend that I had a gun because we both had on jackets and ties. This is back in the 70s. And apparently he thought I was a detective because I put my hand in my pocket and he ran back to his car and his girlfriend was screaming and hollering, "We don't want any trouble here." Anyhow, that night I said, "This is enough." I took my buddy Mike back to the motel, jumped in the rented car that I had, drove to the airport.
I'm willing to bet that what happened to you was the unleashing of a lot of anger that you felt for many, many, many years. Sure. It seems like at one point you were, you know, like all of your life, it sounds like you've tried to temper your anger. You've kind of kept it down. And then when you were down there in Florida, it kind of boiled up again, and you tried to keep it down. And then with this incident, what happened with your friend in the car, it kind of boiled out to the point where you really let your rage begin to show. And that by the time you got back to New York, you had a dream where you were faced with your own rage. And since you were so uncomfortable with your rage, you decide, some part of your body decided it's not safe out there in the world if you let yourself be angry, and it just kept you indoors.
Yeah.
I am sure that this is all about the rage that you finally allowed yourself to feel, and I wish I were around back then to have kind of hung out with you. Maybe we could have stopped it 30 years ago.
I wish you were too, because what happened after that was I went to see doctors. I saw a physical doctor, and he told me, a medical doctor, right? He said, "Listen, I can't help you. The problem's not physical." He said, "It's in your mind." He gave me some Valiums to take, and they didn't help me at all. I mean, I was taking them, and I was just as nervous and pent up and, you know, just anxious at every moment, you know. So I said, I can't deal with this. And there was really no one that I knew who to go to. So that's why it lasted all those years. And the feeling that you mentioned about suffocation and, you know, being afraid of traveling here and staying home and, you know, even being in a car, taking a trip somewhere, drove me crazy. You know, because the feeling of dying was always
so present. Does that kind of hang on with you nowadays? Do you still have a little residuals of that?
Now and then.
Whenever you feel that, whenever it comes up again, I want you to look for your own anger. I want you to look for it, because very often when a person feels the way you do and they have the residual of it, it happens only when there's an anger that's being denied. You don't have to do anything with this anger. You don't have to go out and kick anybody.
Right.
You just have to recognize it. Because really, I could tell from your childhood, there was no room for anger when you were a kid, right?
You're kind of right.
Yeah.
My father was notorious with a belt. And whenever we got out, me and my brothers and sisters got out of line, he would make sure that we didn't do it anymore. And so we couldn't really express our anger. We had to take whatever he doled out. And that might have been a part of, the anger that
of
I felt.
Keeping it down. And, you know, and socially as well, you know, as a black man living in that environment, you know, you also were supposed to keep it down. And so you kept it back and kept it back and kept it back.
Right. You're probably right.
You know.
Well, those things didn't cross my mind at the time, but now I can see how all of that is possible.
Sure, and then you combine that, you know, and eventually you just become a kid who's hiding out from the belt.
Yeah. Well, that was the other thing.
What about it?
Yeah, well, no, a lot of what you said, I believe them to be true. But most of my healing, I think, has come from my own my metaphysics studies and so on, you know, going within and connecting with my spirit self and so on, you know, that's helped tremendously. But,
what I think you've done is you've refathered yourself. You know, you gave yourself, in effect, some form of God. You gave yourself a connection to something much bigger and less frightening.
Well, what I also said was, you know, I would never do to anyone, especially to my child, if I had children, what my father and mother did to me.
Yeah.
Not that they were terrible people, they just did what they were taught to do, and I don't blame them for that. But it had a tremendous impact on my psyche.
I hear. Sorry you suffered, I'm glad you're mostly free of it.
Well, I listened to you, and you helped quite a bit, so I have to, you know, say thank you to you.
Well, Paul, thank you for calling in, too.
You're very welcome.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We have a chance here to take a couple more calls. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air. This is Armand DeMille. I get it. Hi there, you're on the air. This is Armand DeMille.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, my name is Elena, and I have a question about anxiety. I would like to know how is the blood pressure on this situation?
It rises.
Is it very high or is not, doesn't have anything to do with that?
No, the blood pressure raises.
Raises?
Yes.
Okay. Because I was reading on all kind of information, all papers and everywhere, but nobody said nothing about blood pressure.
Well, what happens is, remember, it's all about monitoring the blood for battle. Because the body is looking to have as much weapons for battle as possible. And uh-huh. blood is vitally important because it carries oxygen. Mm-hmm. So what it does is it takes the blood away from the peripheral nerve vessels, like uh-huh. away from your face and away from your fingertips and your toes, and it constricts it and forces it faster. So that's where your blood pressure rises.
Yeah, and I have this situation maybe 3-4 times, and I would like to know how dangerous is this blood pressure at that time. Just for 20-30 minutes is you rise the situation.
Gee, I don't know. You know, I don't know how bad a blood pressure could be. I've seen really high blood pressures just be there temporarily and pass.
Yes,
and
temporarily.
Pass. And I'm sure everybody, for the sake of caution, would say, oh, you shouldn't let it get so high. But I've seen people run their blood pressures up an awful high amount and an awful low amount.
Uh-huh.
And get through. But you'd have to ask somebody who's a physician who studies that stuff. I don't know.
Uh-huh. Okay, everything is okay after 20 minutes, after half an hour. First time I had to go to emergency room because I didn't know what is going on with me. And after a few hours, my husband picked me up and I was perfect. Nothing happened to me.
So then you understand what I mean. It takes 20.
Yes.
And actually, I believe, and my studies say it takes 22 minutes. 22 uh-huh. minutes is what it takes for a panic attack to pass. So that's 22 minutes, and I think your mind is going to be so active that if your mind locks into something and says, oh, the real danger the real danger is out there, you could really get worse and worse. Main thing you could do is have somebody sit with you, and for just 22 minutes is all it takes.
Yeah, everything was okay, only I was scared about my blood pressure was too high.
Yes, you see,
high.
But that's one of the things that the mind will do. The mind will say, where's the danger? And it looks and it says, oh, it's my blood pressure. So it's just the mind looking for something to worry about.
Okay. Thank you so much. I'm listening to your, I'm on my lunch break and I enjoy to go in my car and to listen to you.
So you listen, you listen to me in your car?
Yes, and I'm calling on my cell phone and I have to go.
Okay, well thank you for being
thank
with us.
Thank you so much. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye. And this is Armand DeMille. So just to let you know that related to all of this, phobias is a type of anxiety disorder that affects maybe 10% of all Americans, you know? Obsessive-compulsive disorders, that is also based on high anxiety. Mainly, you know, a person who is trying to control things when they feel that they're out of control. It's the obsessive-compulsive disorders. If you could take care of the underlying anxiety, you could wind up fixing that as well. Post-traumatic stress disorder is another one that relates to that. You know, nightmares and terror attacks. So there's more information available on all of this. There's also an article on my website, thepositivemind.com. If you want to get in touch with me, or if you want a copy of today's show, it's 212-757-4488. That's 212-757-4488. Or send me an email, armand@brainlink.com. I will be back with you, I think next Thursday at 1 p.m., my friends.
are tuned to listener-supported commercial-free community radio.